Welcome to today's SNEB webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Executive Director of SNEB and glad you're joining us for this international presentation. So an Exploring National Food Guides webinar has been organized by the Division of International Nutrition Education. A little housekeeping to get us started. If you look in the GoToWebinar tool panel, you'll see four handouts. So each of our presenters has provided a handout for you to download and follow along with the presentation today. We will take questions after all the panelists have spoken. So please type those in questions in the question block and we can moderate those to our panel. And then when I close the webinar today, there's a short survey. We appreciate your feedback on this session as well as ideas for future webinars. And then watch for a follow-up email. It probably will not reach you until early part of next week, but the follow-up will include a link to the recording, the handouts again, as well as the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance. So I'd like to introduce our moderator today. Dr. Constance Giwa is an associate professor in the Department of Nutrition and Food Studies at George Mason University. Her research focus is on nutritional status of mothers and children in low-income nations, especially those in Africa. Constance, can we make sure you're, oh, there you are.
Thank you, Rachel. I wanna thank everybody in attendance. I'd like to introduce our four presenters for today. And as Rachel said, we'll have a question and answer session at the end of the presentations. Our first presenter is Dr. Sarah Theory. She's an Associate Professor of Nutrition at the University of Southern Indiana. She's a registered dietitian and an active member of SNEB, as well as the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Sarah will start the session by giving us a review of food guides around the world. Our second presenter is Dr. Ana Islas Ramos, who serves as a nutrition officer in the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, where she leads the work on food-based dietary guidelines. She will lead the session on discussing the challenges and opportunities in developing national food guides in middle and low income nations. After Anna's presentation, we will have a response and from Dr. Vanessa White Barrow. Dr. Vanessa is a nutritionist and a senior lecturer at the University of Technology in Jamaica College of Health Sciences. She is the head of the School of Allied Health and Wellness, and she will be sharing experiences in developing food guides in Jamaica and other Caribbean nations. Last but not least, we will have a response from Stacia Nodin. Stacia is a registered dietitian. She works on building healthy environments, agriculture, food systems, and behaviors for optimal nutrition. She has worked in Malawi over the last 25 years, and she'll be sharing with us the Malawi experience in developing the food guides. Welcome to all our presenters. Before we start our session, we are going to have a poll question for you to allow for that interaction, and then we'll be able to share your responses to the poll with everybody. So go ahead and post the poll.
We'll just give that one or two more seconds so that everyone has a chance to vote. Okay, I'll share the response.
Thank you all for your response. We will have our first presentation where Sarah will go over a review of food guides around the world. And from there, you'll figure out which was the right answer. So look forward to her presentation.
Thank you, Stacia. Okay, I'm going to present you the global overview of the food guides in the world. Now, most countries, let me put this on presentation mode. Yeah, we see that most countries publish a food guide, and the FAO has a distinction between the food-based dietary guidelines and food guides. So the food guide is the official term they use for the graphical representation of the guidelines. Now, a lot of the information I'm going to share with you here is from the FAO food-based dietary guideline website. And also I looked at the most current published review on the food-based dietary guidelines. And this is a 2019 publication by Harford and her colleagues published in the Advances in Nutrition. So as you see on this slide, the FAO, and I guess I'll start off by explaining that FAO stands for the Food and Agriculture Organization, that is a specialized agency of the United Nations. And this agency leads
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm not sure that we're seeing your slides yet. Do you have the command that says show my screen?
Oh, yes, I see that. So should I start over?
Yes, go ahead. Yeah, let's make sure your slides are up. Go ahead and share the slides.
Okay, now I share my screen, but I don't see. Okay. How do I go about? I just clicked on the share my slides. Are you able to see it now?
No, it still says we're waiting to see your screen.
Sharing. It's showing sharing here. Oh, I see. Show.
There we are. Oh, that is in the presenter mode. But we can see your screen now.
Okay, you cannot see my screen. So what should I do?
If you go
click on the slideshow.
Sarah, we can see your screen. It just needs the mode changed.
Change the mode to
So go ahead and stop sharing. So go ahead and end this slideshow, and let's see if we can change the settings in PowerPoint to just be the slide.
See monitor, okay. On air showing. So where do I show? Where do I end?
So there at the top, if you hit end slideshow right across the top of the slide.
I'm actually not even seeing the slide.
Okay. Well, why don't you go ahead and, I mean, we can see the slides. We're just seeing more than one slide. But why don't you go ahead and share the information with us. So we're seeing the slide says number of countries with FBDG.
Okay.
Sarah, maybe what you want to do is there, where you are in display settings, click on that and then say swap, and that would work. On the top, display settings.
Display settings at the top.
Yes.
Okay. I'm seeing two screens. One is saying sharing and the other one is saying.
No. On your computer, where the presenter, you can see on the top display settings.
And I'm not seeing display. I see.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me exit.
No. If you go to the left display set, no, show taskbar, no, the next one, display settings.
And slideshow? No,
the one in the matter, in the middle, display settings, oh,
okay.
Yeah. That one.
Okay, I'm
then
panicking.
Swap. No, swap.
Swap, okay.
Yeah, that should work.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Now you see, I'm so sorry. Okay.
Yes, this is great.
All right, is the Africa being masked by another window? I don't know why, okay.
No, we can see everything just fine.
Now you can see it. Okay, very good. All right, I'll try to go quick here to make up for time. So as I was saying, the FAO has defined the regions here, and there are about six regions, and this is by their own designations. And so what I did here is look, what you see on the red is the countries that have the food guides with the graphics, okay? And then the blue shows, I went ahead and looked at all the countries within one region and asked how many countries in this region have food guides. So as you can see, the numbers are pretty small for the blue ratios here. Okay. So that's the biggest difference there. So let's start off with the first one, which is Africa. How do I advance this? It doesn't seem to, okay, there we go. Okay, now most countries provide the dietary guidance to the general public by conveyed in the pictorial images. And these are the images that the FAO terms as the food guides. And as you can see, Africa has only seven. And out of those seven, Kenya only has the guidelines themselves in a document, but the pictorial food guide or the graphic is still not there. In Asia and the Pacific, we have several of them that show the pyramids. And if you made the guess for that poll question you had in the beginning, Japan is the one that you were shown there. Okay. Now look at countries like China. China has three different pictorial images. And so China uses the food guide pagoda, which is the very top on your right hand, which embodies the core of all the recommendations. And then they have two auxiliary graphics. One is they're designed to help give a better understanding of the practical use of, let's say, the my plate in the middle. They call it the balanced meal plate. And then they have the balanced diet abacus. Still within the Asian region, we see that here we are seeing also a good number of pyramids. So they happen to be some of the most common ones. Now, nearly 95 of all the graphics in most regions show this concept of proportionality and showing different food groups here, as you see. The Nepal and New Zealand only have the food guidelines, but not the the pictorial or the graphic itself. In East Asia, the Near East, or what other authorities call the Middle East, only about six countries have them. And this gives you a good example of the cultural graphics on food guides that some countries use to show their cultural identity, such as Qatar with a seashell, Saudi Arabia with a palm tree, and United Arab Emirates is showing the tallest tower in the world, which happens to be one of their top attractions for visiting Dubai. In Europe, we see a good number of pyramids as well. Now, some regions have developed regional recommendations, such as the Nordic nutrition recommendations, which are the main basis for the national food guides in Denmark and Finland, Iceland, Norway, and Sweden. Now, you see also that Mediterranean countries present a larger number of food groups. For example, look at Cyprus. It has several layers showing different food groups there. Okay, and we see Belgium has two distinct food guides as well, a pyramid and an inverted pyramid. Still in Europe, we see other varieties of food guides, and they have a few of them, such as Georgia, Italy, and North Macedonia, that do not have the food guide or the pictorial itself. Now, when you think about food guides globally, we see that there's a large variations in the way the foods are categorized, particularly when it comes to nuts and legumes and animal source foods. And most countries also group their fruits and vegetables relatively consistently. Again, Europe, here we see most of them have typically, again, the pyramid, and Norway happens to have just a simple photograph. Now, the FAO and the World Health Organization food guide, and also the food based guidelines experts reported that most countries do not make any recommendations on how to, or rather these organizations, the FAO, the World Health Organization, and the experts who worked on the food based dietary guidelines really do not make any recommendations on how to group the foods. So acknowledging to the countries that they can group them differently. In Latin America and America, there's also interesting depictions of their food guides. Some are in the form of pineapples, the country map, such as Barbados, the baskets. And it's within these countries, we see that there's much consistency in the way they identify their food groups. So they generally most have the consistency of five food groups, which is namely the starchy staples, the fruits, the vegetables, the legumes, and also the animal sourced foods. In Latin America, here we see most countries include also starchy staples in their food guides, and but not all include them in the key messages. Globally, we see that 66% of countries include key messages concerning staple or other starchy staples. And again, looking globally, in one quarter of countries with key messages, we see that the message is exclusively about whole grains. In Latin America, still, we see that a good variety of this particular set of countries use the plate. So next to the pyramids, the plates are also very common. We see Venezuela has two separate images showing a very unique shape as well, a spinning image there. Now, this is the sixth region, which happens to be United States and Canada. And as you saw from the very the data that was on the map, these two countries have both the guides and the documentations on all the dietary guidelines. And they also happen to be the ones that did provide the latest versions of their dietary guidelines. Most countries do revise their dietary guidelines from time to time, and everybody has a different timeline on what how they do that. So as we can see, the report, or rather that review, does show that there is relatively simple guidance on most common food guides, and guidance such as to consume fruits and vegetables as staples that are mostly this from the starchy group, and also animal source food. While these animal source foods in the preference of which animal source foods to consume is not resolved globally or across countries, there's still the necessity to recommend these kind of groupings while at the same time trying to promote environmental sustainability. So this brings me to the end of the overview. As you see, there's quite a variety of food guides, and they still work to include most countries within the region to embrace the idea of messaging dietary or nutrition recommendations using the food guides. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. We will now have a next presentation from Ana Islas Ramos. Thank you.
Thank you, Constance. Thank you all. Thank you for inviting me to do this presentation. And so as has been mentioned, and I don't know, can you see my screen now?
Not okay.
Is it coming?
Okay, we are seeing two documents, your PowerPoint and the Word document. Okay.
Okay. That's... Can you see it correctly now, or is it the yes. presenters?
It's still in presenters.
Okay, there you go. Okay, thank you so much. So I will be talking about exploring national food guides and a bit what are the challenges in supporting low and middle income countries in developing these food guides. The outline of the presentation is the following. It's what are national food guides? What are their purpose? What has been the process for developing these food guides, and what are the lessons learned and main challenges in developing and testing food guides, in particular in low and middle income countries? So what are food guides, and what is their purpose? As it was very clearly presented, these are national food guides, and they are different shapes and forms, as you can see. They normally include some different national symbols, and they serve different purposes. But I want to start by making a quick note on terminology. They are called many different ways, in some cases food guides, in other cases icons, in other cases food graphics. And there may be some confusion also because, for instance, Canada calls their whole food-based dietary guidelines their food guide, the Canadian food guide. And also when you translate food guide into Spanish, it translates into food-based dietary guidelines. So at FAO, we call them food graphics just to distinguish them from the whole FPDGs. So I'm going to switch to calling them food graphics, and I'm going to tell you what they are and what they are not. So first of all, the food graphics are not the FPDGs. They are not the end of the process of the FPDG methodology. They are not a simple compilation of food items that are forced into a national cultural symbol, and they are not meant to be used in isolation or a standalone. So what are they then? They are part of the FPDG communication products, the tools that are produced as part of the FPDGs, but in some countries have developed them separately. They are also part of what would be considered the implementation strategy for a country. They are one of the several outputs and resources that come out of the FPDGs package that result from a participatory, research-based, and creative process that include, for instance, extensive consumer testing, professional graphic and creative design, and depending on their purpose and format, they may need to have critical quantitative, for instance, dietary modeling results, and qualitative analysis to determine what food groups, proportions of each food group, would ensure variety, adequacy, moderation, and cultural appropriateness, and also which ones are what they communicate to the population or the target audience. So what are they for? They are a visual representation of the types of proportions of foods that needed for a healthy balanced diet. At least that's what the UK says that their food guide does. We are currently revamping the repository, the Food-Based Dietary Guideline Repository, FAO, that countries communicate to us their food guides, and we have included now more information on the purpose of different parts of the package, as I'm calling it now, of products that come out from the Food-Based Dietary Guidelines. And this is one of the results of this revamping. More information on what they are used for in each country. In Ecuador, for instance, the Ecuador Food Guide reflects all these recommendations, all the Ecuadorian the FPDGs, and in particular, they're meant to reflect variety, proportionality, and cultural diversity. In the U.S., the idea is that these my plate, there are two parts of it. They have the USDA food patterns that are supposed to help individuals carry out the recommendations of the dietary guidelines. And then there's, of course, the My Plate, the food icon that serves as a reminder to help individuals make healthier food choices. And in Sweden, for instance, they have these three different food graphics, one of them a plate. The one on the left-hand side is the one that is most known to the population. That is a simple and clear graphic with the three key messages in traffic light colors. Then there is the plate, the model of the plate, that is very difficult to find in the publications that they share, but it is used to promote different food groups and to enable consumers to adopt healthy food choices. And then there's, of course, the key food hole symbol, which is a label that identifies healthy food products within each food category. So what are they for then? Well, depending on where and how the food graphics will be used, they can serve as a teaching tool for healthy diets, a visual cue, a reminder of food groups that consumers should include in their diets and relative proportions, a supplement to other FPDG learning communication materials produced for different target groups, a logo that is used to harmonize actions at different levels and settings where food and nutrition related decisions are taken, a nationally owned symbol of healthy eating, and many other uses. But the most important message I think we can send is that it is very important that these food graphics have a clear purpose. For instance, in the case of Uruguay, they have different graphics that play different roles, but one of them is on harmonization. The plate is part of the educational materials, and then they have a whole different set of visuals that support the individual, the institutions, and the national policies and systems. So it's not a standalone, it goes along with other sets of graphics and images. And in the US, the Robert Post, we had the opportunity to have him in a webinar. He mentioned that it serves, the vision is to enhance information at consumer contact points so that they can find the symbol in food outlets, markets, restaurants, caterers, vendors, wholesalers at different places and remind people about healthy eating. So what is the process that we normally follow to develop these food graphics? Normally what we propose to countries is that they first identify the human resources and evidence information and information needed, then define purpose and characteristic of the graphic, choose the elements of the graphics and select the features of the design, create two or three graphic sketches, field test these sketches, choose the graphic according to the field testing results and make adjustments to the graphics. So that's normally the process that we follow. When we work around the world, with one of the things, as was mentioned also, there are different shapes, pyramids, plates, circle, other cultural elements, and then others. So even if we find a wide variety of figures, the more important thing is that the population identifies with a chosen figure and understands it and fulfills its purpose. When choosing the graphic, the final choice depends on the results of the field test, and choosing the one that has a better, that is better understood by the target group, and of course that it best fulfills the purpose that it was meant to be for. So what are the lessons learned and main challenges in developing and testing FPDG graphics, in particular in low and middle income countries? Well, as I mentioned, a lack of a clear purpose is just, in some cases, it's just developed because it's something that needs to be developed as part of the FPDG process or separately. A lack of evidence and data to inform the different proportions or foods or the information that goes in there. And then also some countries have explained that it's difficult for them to identify graphic artists at affordable rates. For field testing, the challenges are the lack of trained human resources for doing qualitative research and then challenges in traveling to do the field testing in different parts of the country. Some common pitfalls that we see also is, one is compromising the purpose of the graphic for creativeness. Also using national symbols that are not related to the country's food culture. So they use symbols that are not related to foods or diet that are still national but not food related, or that are too complex for the purpose, including photo drawings of foods that are that is not locally available or consumed at national level, trying to depict too many messages or aspects in one graphic, not validating the graphics with representatives of the target population, again, lack of skilled designers and communicators, and including elements that reflect hidden unwanted messages, for instance, showing bottled water or plastic packages or things that may not be, or gender issues can happen sometimes. Then what have we learned? So a Robert Post, in that webinar that I mentioned, Robert Post shared with us that MyPlate has this vision, but it has also these purposes, no? It's a visual symbol of solid science behind the national dietary guidance. It's a visual reminder to choose healthy foods across food groups in suggested proportions, a visual for unifying partners in the food environment, and a visual to prompt for consumers to find more resources for actionable personal dietary recommendations in the website choosemyplate.gov. So what you can see from here is a very clear purpose for it, and it's not teaching people how to eat healthily, as you can see from these. So I guess the main message that I have is that having a clear purpose and making sure that the graphic fulfills that purpose is the main aspect that I can leave you with. The food graphic is one important output of the, so these are the key messages, output of the package of BDG tools that needs to be informed by evidence and needs to be consumer friendly. Food graphics need to have a clear purpose, and they serve to complement and reinforce other FPDG's communication implementation actions produced for different target groups. Food graphics should be designed in a systematic design process based on principles from nutrition, communication, graphic design. They have to be thoroughly tested and evaluated. And I will welcome questions after the next presentations. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna, for a very interesting presentation, an informative presentation. We will now invite Vanessa to respond with the Jamaica Caribbean nation specific context. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you, Vanessa.
Okay, you should be seeing my screen now, I hope.
Do you want to put it on slideshow? Yes.
It's on, right. Great. All right, so again, I want to say thank you to the SNEB and especially Dine for this opportunity to share a little bit about the Caribbean experience in developing food guides. Now, the Caribbean consists of independent small island developing countries that have a very rich cultural culinary heritage. And this has been shaped largely by the different ethnic groups who have come and settled in the region at various points in the history of these countries. And we're talking about the Tainos, the Europeans, the Africans, the Indians, the Chinese in particular. Now, from the 1970s, the countries of the Caribbean have been using a common food guide, which consists of a plate. But what I'm showing you on the slide now is actually still in use and has been in use for quite a few years. But it actually originated from another plate that was developed back in the 70s. And in that food guide for the Caribbean, they had a group called the miscellaneous group, which was added to our six major food groups, which have been consistently recommended for consumption across the region for promoting a healthy diet. Now, this miscellaneous group that was originally there consisted largely of pastry and other dessert foods that we, of course, wanted to encourage our populations to have those groups or that group of foods or foods in that group in smaller quantities. However, over time, the group has been removed. But the message with respect to the consumption of these kinds of foods was embedded in the key messages and the technical documents that are used alongside our food guide in order to guide the type of diet that we want our Caribbean people to engage in order to promote good health. Now, as you can see from the food-based guide or the food guide of the Caribbean, the general one, we have classified our foods into six food groups for consumption. And of course, the portions that are recommended are displayed by way of these segments with on the plate. And of course, like other food guides across the world, the main message that is shared with the population is that we want to encourage a diet that is characterized by variety, that is eating from the different food groups, and also it should be adequate and balanced on a daily basis. Now, since 1999, however, a workshop was convened in Barbados, and this workshop was entitled Development of Food-Based Dietary Guidelines and Nutrition Education for the Caribbean. It was an important workshop because it was jointly organized by the FAO as well as the International Life Sciences Institute. And the arm of the WHO within the Caribbean, that was then called the Caribbean Food and Nutrition Institute, they organized this important workshop, which was set up in order to sensitize the various countries, the participating countries, in developing and implementing national dietary guidelines. And it was from there that we started to see individual English-speaking Caribbean countries putting forward these very creative food guides, which usually depict some aspect of national life in terms of national symbols. And these within these countries have replaced the plate that was used regionally. You'll still find that even within our health sectors and in academia, we still use the Caribbean food plate from time to time. But in these developing countries where they have established their own national food guides, those are used to, of course, guide the consumption of healthy diet on a daily basis. Now, of note, though, is that in some of the countries, you will see, for example, in St. Lucia, where they have used their traditional coal pot, and in St. Kitts as well, they have not just included the six major food groups, but they have also sought to include a group called sugar and sweeteners, again, because they want to place emphasis on the message of reducing the intake of these ingredients in our foods. Now, across the region, however, in the 10 Caribbean countries that have developed food-based dietary guidelines, which include their food guides, and here I'm sharing Jamaica's food guide, there's quite a bit of similarity in the key messages in the various guidelines that have been developed and are being used in the individual countries. The ones that you will see across the region, that is the key messages, are eat a variety of foods from all the food groups daily. And of course, we want our populations to increase their intake of fruits and vegetables, reduce fats, oils, sweet foods, beverages, and of course, salty foods. And what is probably considered new compared to what existed before we started developing national guidelines, we're now including in our messages increased consumption of water, as well as moderation in the use of our consumption of alcohol. This is not a message that is included in the Jamaican list of key messages that accompany our dietary guidelines. But also, because we recognize the challenge that we face with respect to overweight, obesity, and chronic non-communicable diseases across the region, we also include the message about increasing physical activity, on a daily basis. And this is something that is new. Now, when we go to individual countries, however, we'll see some messages that we don't really see across the region in all the guidelines. And I just wanted to single those out because these are specific to these countries. So for example, in Antigua and Barbuda, they have selected their pineapple, their national fruit, to depict their food guide. But among their list of key messages, you'll notice that they have included a message with respect to trying to promote exclusive breastfeeding, which for them and also in Jamaica and other Caribbean countries, it is an important public health challenge that we really want to encourage exclusive breastfeeding. And they have included this in their list of key messages. They have also sought to include food safety by encouraging the population to use safe food handling and food storage practices on a daily basis. In Dominica, So you'll find that even in Dominica and other countries, they have unique messages to promote a healthy diet. And this is of course to address also the health challenges that they're experiencing. Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you, Vanessa, for bringing the Caribbean perspective. Thank you, I now want to invite Stacia to share with us the Malawian context.
Thank you, Constance. And I am sitting up on a hill in Malawi with very limited internet. So I have asked for my slides to be shared. And I also have no video, but at least I hope you can hear me. So on slide number one, you can see I'm going to talk about the Malawi six food groups, which were developed in 1997 and are still used today. I'll talk about some of the changes that have been made. From the first presentation, you remember that Sarah talked about that there are only seven food-based dietary guidelines. We do have a poster and a book, but we didn't go through all the right steps. And I'm going to show you some of the reasons that we still struggle today to get people to use and understand the six food groups, because we still need to go through some of those processes. So Malawi is in Eastern Africa, as shown in the middle there. On slide number two, you'll see a picture of a typical Malawian village, which is essentially where I'm sitting right now on top of a hill, but I'm staying in a forest lodge. Oops, sorry. First of all, you'll see our capital city in Lilongwe. And then on the next slide, you'll see another side of Malawi, which is more of a typical rural village. And you could picture me right now in the middle of those woods on the top left there. It's quite cold. The next slide. I'm completely relying on you, Rachel. So, okay, thank you. Again, it shows our food guide. And the person that was actually hired to do our food guide came from the Caribbean. So our food guide looks quite similar to the Caribbean food guide. It started in 1995, 2 years before I arrived in Malawi. Malawi received a World Bank grant to develop the food guide, and they did a number of studies. They went to the communities. They did many of the steps that Anna spoke about, and decided to switch from the previous food groups, which are three, which are built on the functions of food, energy, building, and protection. I think a lot of people in the 90s were using the go, grow, glow model. And the new food groups were instead group nutrients and encouraged more diversity. The first were a little bit from 2005 to 2010, and I worked on some of this project in the schools, and then World Bank also had a project. And as a task force, we made revisions to the food guide because of the feedback we were getting that there wasn't any Indigenous foods on the food guide and people weren't eating the foods. This poster actually doesn't show the water, but like was mentioned in the Caribbean, some of the posters have water on them as well. In 2010, the food guide got a lot more attention when the scaling up nutrition moved through. Next slide, please. So a study was done in 2015 looking at the awareness and perception of the Malawi food guide. And it was a small sample of 187 households, some in rural and some in urban. And essentially, not very many people after 15 years really knew about the food guide. So 73% of urban homes and 66% of rural homes. A lot of people didn't know why we changed or what it was about. And most people were getting their knowledge if they went to the hospital, but very few got information in the communities. Next slide. So these are a few of my own thoughts on why the slow uptake, and it feeds back into Anna's process slide as well. The information that was released in the community nutrition handbook that came along with the posters was consistent. I, for one, put it right on a shelf and didn't use it because there were so many problems with the handbook. The second issue is that only one department in the Ministry of Agriculture that actually released this model really focused on it. There wasn't a sector-wide approach. We did a lot of talking amongst ourselves as nutritionists, and we didn't have enough studies like Linda did to tell us what people were doing, so there wasn't quite enough tracking. The schools didn't even use the new 6 food groups. They still used the 3 food groups. My daughter is 18 now, and she was born here in Malawi, and she also didn't learn any food groups in her school. And agriculture itself only used it for consumption. They didn't use it for the whole food system, for diversifying production or seed systems. We really, like Robert Post message on the earlier slide, it needs to be used across whole systems. Next slide. So this just shows a picture of the difference between what we're producing on the left, essentially 3 food groups, and what then we're asking people to consume. And you can see the picture there includes water. Next slide. The last reason that I think we've really struggled is the key messages. I'm not going to read through each of them. They haven't changed in 21 years. Wow, are we 21 years now? So the solutions at the bottom, I really think we need to go through that national process as described in the previous presentations and really have a system to track the impact of what we do over time. And then the last few slides, I'm going to show you some ideas of a food systems approach. Next slide. So that the guide is actually used to improve our whole food system. And Rachel, you can go quite quickly through these next slides. Just click on each one for a second. They're mostly pictures of some of the foods that we have here in Malawi and around the world. My slide hasn't changed yet. There we go. So agriculture is the source of nutrition, and it shows fish, it shows orchards, it shows the diversity that we're trying to get in. Again, showing a number of different foods and that Malawi is rich and really the world is rich if we look at all of our foods. And that's a picture of my own garden to end on. Thank you.
Thank you, Stacia. It went well, even though you're at the top of the hill. So, okay, so now it's time for questions. We have a few minutes. We basically only have 5 minutes and we have a few questions that have been posted. I'll go over each one of them. There are 2 questions. There's a question for Anna Ramos. What research, like great information, what research is done to determine the effectiveness of the graphics in changing behaviors after being in use for a year or so?
Thank you. That is a great question. Different countries do different monitoring of how their efforts related to their FPDGs are done, but they normally stay very, it's not easy, and I don't, I haven't seen countries really just assessing the graphics themselves after some time. That is a weakness in most of the processes for the food-based dietary guidelines. A lot of what is followed is how much people are aware of the messages, a little bit of what, like Stacia mentioned, of how many people have heard them. It is also very difficult because people may say, yes, I have heard of them, but then they cannot recall any of them. So it's a different layers. Have they heard about them? Do they remember them? Do they understand them? Do they follow them? And so all of these is it becomes very complex once you try to do some follow up as well. And I have to say, not many countries do assessments of how they work. Yes. And it's also difficult to isolate when they are part of a fuller communication campaign to isolate just what the plate would be doing or the pyramid or whichever food graphic the country has.
There is a second question which is related to that. So you may have answered part of it already, Anna. But if you haven't, you can maybe add just some information to this. The question goes, can anyone comment on how specifically countries have effectively tested their food graphics with their target population? So Anna or Vanessa or Stacia, if you can also share if there are any specific examples you can share from the countries or regions.
So
I didn't hear the question.
I'll read the question again. Can anyone comment on how specifically countries have effectively tested their food graphics with their target populations? So Anna, do you want to start? And then Vanessa and Stacia, you can also join in.
So again, the process that we follow for developing the graphics, right? That follows a process where they are field tested. And so different countries go through this process that normally entails picking sites around the country and target groups to present the different the messages and the graphics. Normally, that's what is presented, and see comprehension and see what is it that they take from the different graphics and any comments regarding the acceptability of the images and the foods or how it's mainly comprehension and that kind of testing that is done during the development process. But then it's not after they are finalized, it's seldom, as I said, evaluated. But I don't know, Vanessa, maybe Sarah, if you have other ideas.
Well, maybe Sarah can add, because in the Caribbean, I mean,
I can add something to that. This is Stacia.
Right.
Go ahead, Stacia.
Go ahead, Stacia.
Do you want me to go ahead, Vanessa, or do you have something? Okay. Yeah. I mean, we're very lucky in Malawi. We're a small group of nutritionists and we're quite tightly knit. And just having our nutrition society formed now, we weren't so tight-knit before when the food guide came out. But I actually only learned about the study that I presented to you when I asked the Nutrition Society who has done something. So we still need to work on sharing information on studies for the food group. But this very webinar has motivated me to make sure that we have more students. And, you know, not putting the studies all in one person, but we can divide up. We have, you know, many organizations supporting nutrition across Malawi. So getting more of these to be done in an organized fashion, I think we can do it.
and make sure we have those feedback systems by all doing a piece of the exploring over.
Thank you, Stacia. We have our last question. This is open to even Sarah and Anna, if you want to share. In the United States, there are actually no foods drawn on our guide. There's no water depicted. Foods to limit is not evident. So in a sense, a wide range of low nutrient foods seems eligible to fit in into the US graphic. Any thoughts for improvements moving forward?
This is Sarah. I think we can learn from other countries that have utilized these particular aspects of the food guide and see what works and what does not work. That's what I have.
Yes, I've mentioned with Robert Post, the idea of the My Plate is not full to do like a teaching tool in particular, but more of a reminder for people to eat healthily. So it's more used as a logo, the My Plate with no images inside. And then when you click away in the website, because it's actually made to be a whole with the website, you will find recipes and things. But I agree that that yes, people could misinterpret it and be able to fit in unhealthy foods. But the idea is that people in the US generally know what is healthy and what is unhealthy. You don't really have to dwell on that too much, but just really remind them to keep doing it. That at least that was a communication from Robert Post on the My Plate.
Thank you. Thank you, Anna. We do have a number of questions that are still that have been posted, but we are running out of time. We are actually 2 minutes beyond our time limit. What we can do is share the questions with our presenters, and we can post the answers. Is that possible, Rachel?
Yes, definitely. I was just going to say that I can share the questions out, and we can send the follow-up out to the attendees.
Thank you, Rachel.
Well, and I'll just say thank you all to our presenters today. A reminder, there'll be a survey when we close this webinar. And then the follow-up email probably won't reach you until next week, but we'll try to get those follow-up questions answered, as well as share the link to the recording and the CEU certificate. And then just a reminder, we did open conference registration on Monday of this week. So SNEB's conference will be 3 days, August 8th through the 10th, virtual. There's presentations by FAO, for example, and all of the session details are up on the website. So I encourage you to share that information with your colleagues, and a virtual conference can everyone around the world can participate. So we are looking forward to having a lots of great discussion and information shared out in August. So otherwise, watch the SNEB website. There's a few more webinars posted yet for this year. Actually, we have a Journal Club webinar on Monday. I'm looking at some work that was done in Uruguay. So I look forward to seeing you back soon on another SNEB webinar.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, SNEB and Diane, for the invitation. Thank you very much.
Thank you for attending, Anna. We enjoyed all of your presentation, all of our presenters. Thank you.
Thank you.